behavior, but to work actively towards social justice. Looking back in history, this new wave of intellectual activism in the context of Islamic awakening held out a promise to each and every walk of life in Iran during the rule of the Pahlavi regime. It inspired the faithful with a spirited hope for imminent redemption, attracted the support of the modern middle class with a promise of political freedom, and mobilized the urban poor with a prospect of more prosperous lives. The Islamic Revolution might not have achieved victory in the name of the nation if it had not managed to gain the support of the modern educated middle classes. The Islamist recruitments of middle-class intellectuals, managers, technocrats, industrial workers, and most crucially women enabled them to broaden the appeal of their agitation against the Pahlavi westernization that eventually led to the victory of the 1979 revolution. And subsequently, in a hallmark two-day referendum held on March 30th and 31st, 1979, more than 98.2% of eligible Iranians voted yes to the establishment of an Islamic Republic in the country. To take a closer look at this turning point in Iran's modern history, please join us on this edition of Iran Today. The debate between secularists and advocates of Islam started at the beginning of the 20th century, when in some countries such as Iran and Turkey, certain aspects of secularizations were enforced by absolute despotism of local governments that had the support of the West. In the secular nationalism of Pahlavi monarchy, the banishment of religion from the political sphere was considered essential to Iran's modernization. For its defenders, it signified a sacred cure for all the ills of Iranian society.
In the aftermath of the Second World War, a bipolar system was formed gradually, by which the world was divided by the powers, the US and the Soviet Union, capitalism versus communism. It was almost as if no nation could even imagine independence. However, some might involve themselves in certain independence-seeking movements from time to time. Their endeavors would merely result in them going under the influence of the Soviets instead of the Portuguese. Many examples of this could be seen at that time in the world.
Religious activism, on the other hand, came to represent the return of religion to public and political life. Shia Islam demonstrated the capacity to engender grassroots national consciousness within a modern society. For decades, Iranian Muslims fought to wrest the nation out of the control of secular rulers in order to wind back westernizing assimilation and reinstate Islamic values. They shrewdly sensed the lack of public enthusiasm for top-down secular modernization and instead stirred up deeply felt religious emotions that generated passions in support of an Islamic revolution at the national level.
A person named Lenin fired a bomb on board the St. Petersburg ship and declared a communist government. The people of Russia, which later became the Soviet Union, did not know anything about this revolution and had only seen the hammer and sickle flag. Neither Lenin had the opportunity to explain nor the Russian media had the power and opportunity to shed some light on the revolution and familiarize people with their Bolshevik communist revolution. The same thing happened in France. They said the great French Revolution had happened, but again, people were kept in the dark. The Nazis also launched a massive revolution led by Adolf Hitler, where again the people were alienated and ignorant of the details of the system by which their country was to be controlled. But this was not the case in Iran. The Islamic Revolution had occurred in Iran. The word Islam attached to the name of this revolution made all the people happy because people felt that the same Islam that they deal with in their daily lives, the same Islam that they are familiar with at work, at home, on the street, in social relations, etc., that this Islam is going to become the law and rule us, so they got nothing to fear from.
Accordingly, the idea of establishing an Islamic government based on the Shia teachings became reality soon after the 1979 revolution that led to the overthrow of the Pahlavi regime. A combination of republicanism and Islamic values was offered to people for their endorsement in a referendum. In the process, the confrontation between secularism and religion was once again debated in the political arena.
Some people believe that according to the political parties and political schools and the prevailing government systems of that time, the Iranian system should be named Islamic Democratic Republic of Iran or even Republic of Iran. Various names were suggested, but since Imam Khomeini himself had developed the theory of Velayat-e-Faqih, he emphasized that a 100% Islamic system should rule in Iran. Of course, the decision rested with the people, and if the majority of votes said no to the Islamic Republic, Iran would definitely be ruled by another system, as Imam Khomeini had also mentioned in his speeches. Imam believed that when you say Islamic Democratic Republic, it means that Islam does not accept democracy, while in Islam, democracy is presented in a more legitimate and modern form. In fact, the concept of democracy itself was different in different political systems and the Eastern and Western blocs, and each of them had conflicting definitions.
This time, the vision of the religious leaders believing in Velayat-e-Faqih, or the guardianship of the Islamic jurists in the absence of the 12th Imam, including Ayatollah Khamenei, was triumphant over other interpretations of a system of government. Ayatollah Khomeini's resolve and charisma had the ability to obtain broad public support for an Islamic Republic as the agent of the nation's awakening to its authentic identity. Henceforth, an emphatic public recognition was obtained in a referendum in March 1979, which endorsed the establishment of Iran's Islamic Republic.
The issue of the referendum was discussed with Imam Khomeini. At that time, some people and political figures believed that when the Iranian nation have approved Imam and his religious and political views, there is no need to hold an official referendum based on the known protocols of the world. But Imam Khomeini emphasized that the future of the country and the system should be put to the vote and registered so that it will remain forever in history as one of the achievements of the Islamic Revolution. He believed that the world should know that the people came to the polls by their own choice and voted for the Islamic Republic.
The social potency and mass appeal of Imam Khomeini's religious beliefs resided in a unique combination of religious traditions and populist egalitarian slogans. On his triumphant return to Iran from exile, Imam promised national dignity, economic prosperity, but more importantly, an ideal state of spiritual enlightenment. His pledge to awaken Shia believers to their divine identity and blissful destiny appealed to an unfairly treated public that felt betrayed by the secular elites of the Pahlavi era. It provoked public fears of a loss of religious identity under a secular regime and promised that an Islamic establishment would alleviate these fears. After the establishment of the Islamic Republic, independence, spirit of self-credence and self-reliance, challenging the West, neutralization of U.S. malicious plots in the region, and the culture of resistance became some of the achievements of the revolutionary Iran.
Given the fact that Imam Khomeini talked about religion and Islamic beliefs, and the people also had religion and Islamic beliefs, a situation was created where the leader and the nation understood each other's words very well, and it gave results very quickly. If the foundation of Imam's revolution was mere politics, then the National Front should have taken over years earlier, as it was far ahead of Imam's movement. Even the government once fell into the hands of Mossadegh and his like-minded people, but it was not stable. They had thousands of theories, organizations, and possibilities, but Imam Khomeini had nothing. He had no special companions, no money, no capital, no support from the West or East. Imam Khomeini had nothing but Islam. He was alone in France, and he preached from there. Even when he was returning from France, the people of Iran did not even know who was with him on plane. He had no party or anything. There was only one word, Islam.
The events and challenges of the last 44 years testify to the fact that the Iranian nation is very capable of rising to the occasion. Case in point, when Iraq launched a full-scale invasion of Iran on 22nd September 1980, the resilient characteristics of the Iranians caused the threat of the imposed war to become an opportunity for the country.
Naturally, in the process of all revolutions, as Imam Khomeini and the leader also pointed out, some abandon the revolution and new ones replace them. I mean, in the Islamic Revolution of Iran, some followers changed their ideas and turned their backs on the revolution. However, on the other hand, some new people became followers. But the point is that on important national or religious occasions, you can measure the quality of a government and its popularity amongst the people. You must measure the acceptability of the system in historical and difficult social and political times. For example, in this year's anniversary of the Islamic Revolution demonstrations, despite all the sanctions, economic pressures, all kinds of psychological and cognitive wars, the turnout was incredibly huge and it was larger than any other year. In this year's demonstrations, people from all walks of life and different religious and political beliefs participated, and it showed that people are still loyal to this government.
According to the leader of the Islamic Republic, Ayatollah Khamenei, the eight-year war, dubbed as the Holy Defense, became the scene of religious beliefs and moral standards of the Iranian nation. Enumerating the achievements, the leader said, "In the shadow of that era, the popularity of the armed forces increased and people felt safe, and this feeling of security was very important." Adding, "At that time, the Holy Defense unified the nation and proved that protection and the deterrence of the country against the enemy is obtained by resistance." The Iranian nation has experienced many ups and downs in the last four decades. Nevertheless, it has managed to thwart all plots and conspiracies waged by enemies against the Islamic Republic successfully.
Certainly, no revolution can claim that it has preserved all its supporters in the long run. This is a rule that covers all revolutions, but it should be seen whether this drop is reasonable or not. What is certain about Iran's revolution is that the loss of the followers in the first stage was due to the incompetence of some officials and managers. It is not the fault of Islam or the constitutional system. If our constitution was implemented correctly, these losses would be much less. Some officials of the Islamic Republic have said many times not to attribute our performance to Islam. It is a reality.
In line with that, Iran has introduced and institutionalized a new model of resistance and defense against external threats in recent years, which is very influential and effective with transnational characteristics that has created deterrence against enemies and provided strategic depth for the country. Furthermore, for more than four decades, utilizing its wealth of expert talent and manpower, the Islamic Republic has adhered to its principles of progress and subsequently reached the apex of scientific advancement and new technologies in international arenas.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
There's plenty more right after a quick diversion into world media. Here's how it looks on the page. English Al Arabiya reads, Iran, Saudi Arabia detente to positively affect our ties with Egypt, Jordan, Bahrain. Days after regional heavyweight Saudi Arabia agreed to normalize ties with Iran, Tehran says it has set its sights on Cairo, Amman, and Manama next. Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the resumption of diplomatic relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia will have a positive effect on Tehran's ties with regional neighboring Arab countries, Egypt, Jordan, and Bahrain. Fortunately, with the positive atmosphere that we are witnessing in the region, this positive development can happen in connection with other regional countries as well, including Bahrain. We should further trust the path of diplomacy and take steps in this direction, state news agency IRNA quoted Kanani as saying. He added, Egypt is an important country and the two countries value each other's importance in the region. The region needs the positive capacities of both Tehran and Cairo. Political ties between Iran and Jordan have not been abandoned in recent years, he said, adding that Tehran was ready to expand and further develop its ties with Amman. Mehnous says, leader, Iran to continue pursuing strong connection with Asian states. Leader of Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei delivered a speech at Imam Reza Shrine in Mashhad on the occasion of the first day of Nowruz, the start of the Iranian year of 1402. In his remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei stressed that what the enemy is seeking and dubs transformation is in fact changing the identity of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Elsewhere in his remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei hailed the Iranian strong faith and self-esteem in confronting consecutive foreign hostilities for several decades. Westerners tried to isolate Iran earlier. What happened had the opposite result. Yes, our relationship with the West weakened, but we made our relationship with Asia 100% stronger, Ayatollah Khamenei underlined, adding that the country will follow this track after on. Saying that Tehran seeks to establish strong connections with Africa and Latin America, Ayatollah Khamenei stressed that Iran is also ready to work with any of the European governments and countries if they do not blindly follow the U.S. policies. According to Reuters, Iran's top security official in UAE to seek stronger ties. Iran's top security official held high-level talks in the United Arab Emirates on March 16 as Tehran seeks greater outreach to Gulf states amid mounting tensions with the West over the country's nuclear work and its drone sales to Russia. The visit by Iran's Supreme National Security Council Secretary Ali Shamkhani comes days after Tehran and Riyadh reached a China-facilitated deal to re-establish relations and reopen embassies within 2 months after years of hostility. After years of animosity on different sides of geopolitical rivalries, the UAE started re-engaging with Tehran in 2019. Considering the suitable platforms that have been created since a year ago for the development of relations between Iran and the UAE, I see this trip as a new stage for political, economic, and security relations, said Shamkhani in Abu Dhabi, Iranian state media reported. The Iranian People's Revolution is only a point in the start of the revolution of the great world of Islam. These words of Ayatollah Khomeini, the founding father of the Islamic Republic and leader of the 1979 Iranian Revolution, mark the beginning of a project to inspire and enable an Islamic revival across the Muslim world. Time has proved that this was not merely revolutionary rhetoric. The Iranian government today and much of its policy, both internal and external, derive from the ideology of the Islamic Revolution. Understanding the broader ideology of the revolution is critical to understanding major geopolitical shifts in the region and beyond. 40 years on from 1979, this is still often misunderstood by Western policymakers. Their policy towards Iran has consistently overlooked the power of the ideology born in the revolution. The lack of understanding means that they have severely underestimated the extent of Iran's commitment to upholding and exporting 1979's revolutionary ideology.
The fact of the matter is that the schools of thought in the world, including liberalism, capitalism, secularism, socialism, have all failed to be revered as before. The West is very sorry about this because they feel Islam is replacing them. This guy named Richard Kuchan has written a book entitled As the End of the US Era, which says we have nothing to tell the world anymore. Even inside the country, there is no possibility for us to survive. All our survival factors have been destroyed inside the country and outside. We have lost our eligibility, he noted.
In the Imam's worldview, people were divided into oppressed and oppressors, and Islam was the answer to protect the former from the latter. This worldview believed in Islamic governance and resistance to Western imperialism led by the U.S. and the existence of Israel. Many of the values that Imam upheld resonated across the Muslim world.
The purpose of forming the Islamic Republic system based on the rule of Velayat-e Faqih was actually to change the geometry and structure of global power. This is the reason why, after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, we witnessed many changes in the region and the world. This change is still ongoing. Currently, the Islamic Republic's overseas actions, especially the actions of the IRGC Quds Force, which was once under the leadership of martyr Haj Qasem Soleimani, are also in line with this policy, that we must move towards changing the unipolar system in the world to a multipolar system.
With Iran's revolution, Imam Khomeini and his disciples succeeded in creating a state on Islamic principles and jurisprudence. The attainment of an Islamic government was not only a success for them, it was also a significant victory for Muslims outside Iran. Imam had transformed a long-desired Islamic ideal into reality and proved that governance based on Sharia was possible in the modern world.
After the victory of the revolution, we witnessed a wave of Islamism throughout the globe. Even in the region, the wave is different in various countries, but both given the existence of the Zionist regime and their agenda, and given the conditions of the regional regimes in terms of their governance, the revolution's ambitions, which are human ambitions, are not limited to the geography of Iran, as we and many scholars maintain that the French Revolution was not a French revolution. The Islamic Revolution was not an Iranian revolution. Is an Islamic movement whose ambitions may be welcome anywhere in the world.
This galvanized Islamic movements across the Muslim world. While sectarianism in the region may have blurred the lines between Shia and Sunni fundamentalism, however, both movements share the goal of achieving Islamic governance.
Secular nationalists, too, still fail to grasp the significance of religion as a driving force of the 1979 revolution and a pillar of the legitimacy of the post-revolutionary state. This failure stems from their devotion to the idea that religion is bound to decline as a political force. As scholars in Iran have shown, secular nationalist leaders are overly invested in the idea that the scientific outlook is destined to relegate religion to the dustbin of history. They thus neglect the political force of religion, which remains alive in the everyday lives of the people. They fail to come to grips with the impact of religion as a modern political force opposed to Western modernity.
Understanding the importance of the Iranian Revolution and its political potential, which to this day has remained inexhaustible, is a key to wider stability and peace in the West Asia region.
In effect, we demonstrated the world with a new model of revolution which is relying on the informed masses, the political, revolutionary Shia Islam, which values martyrdom, and relying on the leadership of political, religious marja, which gave birth to a new source of power in the world. Maybe some people still don't understand the power of these three elements when joined together. This power has literally dismantled the basics of the West's ideology, both before and after the Islamic Revolution.
April 1, 1979 represents genuine democracy in Islamic Iran, a democracy which came about through the ballot box, through the votes of the Iranian people. The referendum was based on the fundamental principle that the people should decide their own political future through the ballot box. Imam Khomeini's initiative to hold a referendum granted a very high status and credit to the Islamic Republic, and this fateful move gave dignity, grandeur, and real independence to the Iranian nation. In fact, this move internalized the authenticity of people's votes in the early months of the emergence of the Islamic Revolution.
We added an adverb to the word freedom, and that is Islam. We believe in freedom within the framework of Islam. We distinguish between obscenity and freedom. It means that our beliefs should be in accordance with our democracy and should not contradict Islam. If so, in our opinion, this is not democracy. From our point of view, freedom is right as long as it does not harm the freedom of others. The freedom of others is determined by the Constitution. Obscenity takes away freedom from many people. We should accept it. And about democracy, if the majority of the people vote for something that is against the basics of Islam, we don't want it because Allah doesn't want it.
44 years on, the issues associated with the combination of republicanism and Islam has been managed and at times reformed according to the dynamic Shia scholarship. And it is moving in the direction that, as a sapling that was planted in 1979, it will continue to develop and grow to be a model for the rest of the Islamic societies, both in the political and economic fields. Iran is an immense country with an identity marked by the self-esteem of those who know they are part of a great civilization. Geography also plays a part in Iran's desire to be a great regional power. This nation-state is located at a strategic intersection between the Arab, Turkish, Russian, and Indian worlds. It is a key point of transit for the Middle East, the Persian Gulf, Central Asia, the Caucasus, the Indian subcontinent, and the Caspian Sea.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Please do tune in same time next week and each week after. Till next time, take care.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. So Ali Nasir, Hassan and Hussein, as you know, today we'll talk about Ayah 47 and 48 of Surah Ali Imran on page 56. Okay, so brothers and sisters, as you're listening to us, please turn to page 56, Ayah 47 and 48 of Surah Ali Imran, inshallah. So, everybody, if you're ready, let's once listen to the recitation, then inshallah we'll come back. Alright? Let's go.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. قالت ربي أنى يكون لي ولد ولم يمسسني بشر قال كذلك الله يخلق ما يشاء إذا قضى أمرا فإنما يقول له كن فيكون ويعلمه الكتاب والحكمة والتوراة والإنجيل.
Nice recitation, alhamdulillah. Thank you so much. We really enjoyed. Thanks for to our brothers for playing this nice recitation. Now I will recite and make sure you brothers repeat our brothers and sisters who are listening to our IRIB English radio right now to us, okay? Then inshallah will practice as well. Ready?
Yes.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
قالت رب أنى يكون لي ولد ولم يمسسني بشر.
قالت رب أنى يكون لي ولد ولم يمسسني بشر.
قال كذلك الله يخلق ما يشاء.
قال كذلك الله يخلق ما يشاء.
إذا قضى أمرا فإنما يقول له كن فيكون.
إذا قضى أمرا فإنما يقول له كن فيكون.
ويعلمه الكتاب والحكمة والتوراة والإنجيل.
ويعلمه الكتاب والحكمة والتوراة والإنجيل.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
أحسنتم ما شاء الله. الله المعيري bless you إن شاء الله. قالت رب أنى يكون لي ولد وَلَمْ يَمْسَسْنِي بَشَرٌ. Huh? In the previous ayah, Allah Almighty sent the angels. The angels gave the news to Lady Maryam, Lady Mary, that Allah Almighty, إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُبَشِّرُكَ بِكَلِمَةٍ مِنْهُ اسْمُهُ الْمَسِيحُ بْنُ
مَرْيَمْ.
Right?
Yes.
Give the news of blessing Lady Maryam with a child named Isa. Isa ibn
Maryam.
While Lady Maryam was not married ever. Right? And she was a purified lady. Yes? She was a chaste. Yeah. Right? So, she says, قَالَتْ رَبِّ أَنَّا يَكُونُ لِي وَلَدْ. How can I have a baby? How can I have a child? وَلَمْ يَمْسَسْنِي بَشَرٍ. Seeing that no human has ever touched me. I've never got married and no one has ever touched me. How can it happen? قَالَ كَذَلِكَ اللَّهُ يَخْلُقُ مَا يَشَاءُ. This is how Allah Almighty create human beings. I told you in the previous sessions that in one of the verses of the Quran, I forgot exactly what ayah and what surah, but I remember the message was this way. That for some of you, if we want, we give a son. For some of you, if we want, we give you a daughter. For some of you, if we want, we don't give you any of them. This is the way Allah Almighty does, okay? And Allah Almighty says, إِذَا قَضَى أَمْرًا. When He decides on a matter, on something, okay? He just says to it, be. And it is. كُنْ فَيَكُنْ. Be. Exist. And it is existed. Okay, so when Allah Almighty does this, but yeah, of course, Allah Almighty uses some means also. It does not mean that we Allah Almighty is like not powerful. Yeah, he is in need. No, he is غني. نحن الفقراء. Okay, الله هو الغني الحميد. Guys, in terms of like the creation, the birth of Prophet Isa alayhi salam, there are a lot of things to talk about, and also, it needs like somebody should be professional at this. He should have a lot of research to talk about to the people. And also, we don't have much time. We don't have that knowledge. inshallah, I ask you to refer to the Tafasir book, okay? To learn more to the ahadith, inshallah. We don't have much time. We will quickly go to the tajweed rules. All right? Yes. Are you ready?
Yes.
Yes.
So I will mention the important tajweed rules, inshallah, and then we will finish our class. وَيُعَلِّمُهُ الْكِتَابِ And he will teach him the book and wisdom, وَالْحِكْمَةِ وَالْتَوْرَاةَ وَالْإِنْجِيلِ And the Torah and the Evangel or Injil, the Bible.
قرآني في قلبي دوما يغمرني من فيض ضياء آيات
IRIB English Radio, in cooperation with Xavier International Schools, presents Let's recite the Quran.
So, قالت ربي أن يكون لي ولد ولم يمسسني بشر. قا has a heavy sound. أن has a light sound. يكون لي ولد. أن نون مشدد. A nasal sound you should produce. حسن. حسين. Okay?
Okay.
أن يكون لي ولد. Walad, dal has a tanween. And after tanween, you have the letter waw. What should you do? Idgham, merge them together. Anna yakunu li waladu. Do. Idgham with gunna or without? With nasal sound or without?
With gunna.
With gunna. Walam yamsasni bashar. If you stop here, tanween changes to sukun. Bashar. Sila tells you it's you can stop here, but Ali Nasir, there is another thing as well. You can stop here, but...
It's better to continue.
It's better to...
Continue.
Continue. There is another option, like a sign of stopping, that which is just opposite to this.
Yeah.
From one side, it's the same. From one side, it's different.
Yeah.
When it's the same and permission and to stop.
Stopping, yeah.
That is qila, right? Qila and sala. They both say what? You can stop. But sala tells you, Hassan?
You can continue.
You can continue. It's better to continue or it's yes. better to stop?
It's better to continue.
Yeah, sala. Hussein, qila tells you it's better to?
Stop.
Stop, but they both say you can stop. They are good.
So no, better to stop.
Better to stop, better to continue. That's the difference. So, brothers, قَالَ كَذَلِكِ اللَّهُ Right? I think we recited كَذَلِكَ اللَّهُ Right?
Yes.
That was a mistake. So, كَذَلِكِ اللَّهُ It's, I didn't pay attention to this. It's a female, Lady Maryam, yes? كَذَلِكِ So, this is, we call it demonstrative pronouns. Demonstrative pronouns. So, for females, for males, they are different in Arabic. كَ is for male, كِ is for female. كَذَلِكِ اللَّهُ So if it is ki, so Allah, the word Allah, the lam in the word Allah will be pronounced lightly. كَذَلِكِ اللَّهُ Right? يَخْلُقُ مَا يَشَاءُ Alright?
Yes.
So make sure if we recited كَذَلِكَ اللَّهُ That was a mistake. Sorry. You recited correctly. يَخْلُقُ مَا يَشَاءُ So the mad is wajib, right?
Yes.
Yes. إِذَا قَضَى Qadha, dad is important. It has a heavy sound. Also, the pronunciation is much difficult, but you practice it, it becomes easy. Amran, tanween plus fa. Hmm? Amran.
Oh,
ikhfa. Ikhfa, hide the sound of noon. Amran, fa innama yaqulu lahu kun fa yakun. Again, ikhfa.
Ikhfa.
وَيُعَلِّمُهُ الْكِتَابَ وَالْحِكْمَةَ وَالتَّوْرَاةَ وَالْإِنْجِيلَ إِنْجِيلْ إِخْفَى That's all. There is not any important or difficult tajweed rule. Once again, we'll repeat these two verses. Just brothers and sisters, listen carefully and repeat after us. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Now that you know the tajweed rules in these two verses, pay more attention, inshallah. قالت ربي أنى يكون لي ولد ولم يمسسني بشر.
قالت ربي أنى يكون لي ولد ولم يمسسني بشر.
قال كذلك الله يخلق ما يشاء.
قال كذلك الله يخلق ما يشاء.
إذا قضى أمرا فإنما يقول له كن فيكون.
إذا قضى أمرا فإنما يقول له كن فيكون.
ويعلمه الكتاب والحكمة والتوراة والإنجيل.
ويعلمه الكتاب والحكمة والتوراة والإنجيل.
إنجيل أحسن إخبار. صدق الله العلي العظيم.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
أحسنتم. Thank you so much, brothers and sisters, for listening to IRIB English Radio. Thanks to Hassan Hussein Ali Nasser for being with us in this session. Thank you so much. Allah bless you, inshallah. We really recommend you stay with us in the coming for the coming sessions, inshallah, okay? In the coming days. Tomorrow at the same time, don't forget to include us in your du'as in the holy month of Ramadan. Everything good you do has a lot of thawab and will be doubled. Okay, even if you're tired, sleep, you'll get thawab, inshallah. Okay, double thawab. So, Allah Almighty bless you all, inshallah. We'll be here with you in the coming sessions. Thanks to IRIB English Radio. Thanks to Sevier International Schools Network for cooperations. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammadi wa alihi at-tahirin.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Let's recite the Quran. A joint production of IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools.
آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
Shout for their victory.
Part 1.
Football is one of the most lucrative businesses in our time. Not many industries can overtake it. Football is the most powerful non-media phenomenon in the world. All tycoons and influential people want to have control over it. Football is the most important news in the world. All cameras are fixed on the green field. Think about it a little. What can you find in this world that's not tied to football? We can't shut our eyes. Football is everywhere. It's so conspicuous and omnipresent that you cannot deny it. Fans and spectators, the strongest impetus for football. Just imagine for a moment what would have happened if football didn't enjoy such a huge popular support. This is a rule. The larger the number of the people who are engaged in a phenomenon, the more significant the phenomenon will be. Football gets its power from the cheering of the fans. But why do people become fans? Wherever in the world 22 people run after a ball, some spectators will definitely show up. In some places, fewer people, and in some other places, more people. And sometimes, there is such a huge crowd of spectators and fans that it hinders the match. For example, in the final match of the knockout games in Britain in 1923, over 300,000 people stormed the stadium. Many other matches in the history of the sport had so many spectators that they had to sit up to the sidelines. Fans, whether it's stadiums or in front of TV screens or monitors, will be an integral part of matches and events related to them. They jump up and down, they cry, they shout and get mad as far as getting a heart attack. They swear, they fight, they cause mayhem, and sometimes they even get killed. The spectators cheer their favorite teams and players and give them energy. Sometimes they do it so well, it leads to a comeback. The spectators boo the rival team's players and make them nervous. Even if it's necessary, they disrupt the games. As it's always said, they're the 12 players of their team. That's why all players and coaches share their happiness with them, because football spectators are not just watchers of a sports match. For those who watch matches under scorching heat or heavy snow, football is no joke. They love football. But what do people want from football? Why do they arrange everything in their lives based on football? The first answer is this: entertainment. Football is the best entertainment in the world. You only need to watch it to feel the miracle, the beauty of the techniques, the excitement of the sideline issues, the amazing tactics, and eventually, the display of fate. You can find everything in football. Everything you need for happiness, sadness, surprise, or excitement. Even in the most boring matches, there are things that will make you remember them for weeks. After all, people always want to be entertained. That's why they watch movies or go on vacations or do thousands of other things. Football gives them this gift. What's more entertaining than being at a stadium and watching the most beautiful sport by mankind? Oh, but more importantly is the feeling of it. When people enter the stadium, they become members of a big society, a group with the same flag and colors, with the same slogans, the same goal, the same idea, and the same wish. You become united with thousands of people at the stadiums who sing the same song or laugh and cry for the same thing. It satisfies one of human beings' most basic needs, the tendency to socialize, the need to be united with others, the instinct to communicate with a group without the usual expenses for social relationships. Being a part of a coordinated society is the best feeling in the world. It's a feeling of sameness and cordiality, a feeling of esprit de corps. And the third reason is what we call catharsis.
Most amazing Champions League night this great crowd has ever seen. It's the greatest ever semi-final comeback in the history of the competition. Liverpool are into the final, and we will never ever forget quite how they did it.
Catharsis is the feeling the audience gets after listening to a masterpiece symphony or watching an impressive play. It's a kind of revolution inside you. It's a kind of spiritual experience. Football is a small example of our life. So merciless, so beautiful, and so fair. The most sorrowful tragedies along with surprises, achievements, and epics. The biggest protagonists next to the most detested antagonists in the most spectacular clashes. Watching football makes you feel that you're part of a bigger experience, a part of the common experience by human beings whose identity is exactly similar to our life. The experience of watching a good match is just like watching a play by Shakespeare. You have a strange feeling afterwards, a kind of pleasant lightness. People watch football for these things. The importance of the spectators can't be realized anywhere as much as in the World Cup. The World Cup is the most important event in the world of football. It's a headline of all the media in the world. Billions of people across the world watch it. All nations follow it. That's why a national team's participation in the World Cup is the biggest dream for its fans. They support their teams months ahead of the games, in World Cup qualification games, in friendlies, in practice sessions, and even at the airports. They're always everywhere, and they accompany their teams in the breathtaking path towards the World Cup. If a country's national team isn't used to regularly taking part in the World Cup, they hold large celebrations on the streets after qualification. Fans boost the players' spirits along the way to prepare for the World Cup. And they get ready and go to the stadiums on the other side of the planet to shout their country's names and support the players. This is a climax of human beings' love for football.
ربنا ربنا ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be asking an interesting question, and that question is about the etiquettes of fasting. What are the etiquettes of fasting? As you know, we are in the month of Ramadan, and the month of Ramadan is a very important month spiritually. It is the month in which we are obliged to fast. And it's also a month with other distinctions. For example, it's the month in which the Holy Quran was revealed to the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. It is a month in which we have the occurrence of the famous night of ordainment, Laylatul Qadr. So there's a lot of other spiritual distinctions for this month. It's the only month which has been mentioned in the Holy Quran by name, Shahrul Ramadan. And we're obliged to fast, of course, in this month. But, you know, fasting, everything has its own etiquettes, its adab, you know, its customs that should be accompanied with. Today, we're going to be looking at some of the etiquettes of fasting. The Holy Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, has been reported to have said, "Allah Mighty and Exalted says, 'He whose limbs do not fast by refraining from what I have prohibited, then there is no need for him to refrain from food and drink is for my sake.'" And this is interesting hadith. This is actually a hadith of Qudsi. As you know, sacred hadith. These are hadiths which related by one of the infallibles from Allah. And these are the actual words of Allah, but they're not part of the Holy Quran. In this hadith, Allah says that if you cannot keep your limbs away, other limbs away from prohibited things, there's no need for you to refrain from food and drink. Meaning, which means that while you're fasting and refraining from those things which are one should avoid in the state of fasting, it's also necessary for you to keep your other limbs away from those things which are prohibited. And in another hadith, we read the following. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "Fasting is just as much keeping away from prohibited things as it is keeping away from food and drink." As-siyamu ijtinamul maharim kama yamtani'u rajulu minat ta'ame washarab. And in a very beautiful hadith narrated from the daughter of the Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, Fatimatu Zahra, alayha as-salam, she said, "What is the fasting person doing with his fast if he is not guarding his tongue, his hearing, his sight, and his limbs from sin?" And finally, Muhammad ibn Muslim, a very famous transmitter of hadith, has been reported to have said, "Abu Abdullah alayhi salam, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, 'When you fast, your hearing must fast, along with your sight, your hair, your skin.' And he listed a number of other things and said, 'The day that you fast must not be like a day that you do not fast.'" You can't just be fasting and, you know, you're playing video games, you're Facebooking and doing everything that you used to do on other days. The only thing is you're not eating, right? A lot of people, you know, they try to get through the day fasting by actually these kind of things increase on those days. They play more video games on those days. They watch more movies on those days just to preoccupy themselves so they don't remember that they're hungry and thirsty, right? If this is the state of fasting, then, you know, there's no really need to fast. Right? We should try to be better on the days that we're fasting. That was the whole purpose of fasting. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the etiquettes of fasting. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.